I think it's when I was so obsessed about getting the platform out there, because while I was working at Microsoft, all I could think was, how do I build a platform that could fix this problem that I've been thinking about for so long? And then that became even like so overwhelming in my thoughts. So I'm like, I have to get it out there. Enough about something, you'll do whatever it takes to. We found a niche, we built a product that is appealing enough and people want it. Now we just need to bring it to those people wherever they are.
All right, welcome back to the Middle Tech Podcast. You've got Logan Jones here, joined by Evan Knowles. And today we are catching up with Stevens Bonham, who is the founder and CEO of Feed Coyote. So Feed Coyote is an all-in-one collaboration network platform that connects freelancers and professionals from around the world. The platform has a range of features to help users network, collaborate on projects, and manage their work more efficiently. So we first talked with Stevens back in October of 2022. We're excited to catch up with him, but before we do, we just want to get a quick word from our sponsors.
Before highlighting our sponsors, we'd just like to state that the views and content shared on this platform do not necessarily reflect those of our show sponsors. Middle Tech is presented by KY Innovation, the Kentucky Cabinet for Economic Development's Office of Entrepreneurship. KY Innovation exists to support and develop Kentucky's startup ecosystem, and we are proud to be supported by an organization whose mission aligns so closely with ours. If you're a founder building in Kentucky, you need to check out the resources that KY Innovation has to offer. You can find more information by clicking the link in our show notes or going to kyinnovation.com.
Middle Tech is sponsored by Bolt Marketing. Take your website to the next level with a website that's built to work. At Bolt Marketing, they're revolutionizing websites for small businesses that are affordable, customizable, and hassle-free. Whether you have a construction company, a boutique clothing store, or you own a hot yoga studio, they have options for you. Click the link in our show notes to explore their marketing options that can transform your marketing and grow your business. And as a personal note, Bolt Marketing built our website and they were awesome to work with throughout the entire process. We highly recommend working with them.
Middle Tech is also sponsored by Gotenna, the world's leading mobile mesh networking provider that's revolutionizing how first responders and defense teams stay connected during critical missions in austere or comms denied environments. They partner with Kentucky's defense tech innovators, ensuring secure and reliable off-grid connections. If you're a founder looking to enhance your technology's communication capabilities for off-grid operations, Gotenna is looking to collaborate. Check them out at go.gotenna.com/middletech or reach out to us to get connected.
Middle Tech is also supported by Huntsicker, an impact venture studio based in Lexington, Kentucky. Huntsicker is creating companies out of the ordinary by founding and funding the next generation of purpose-driven startups. They partner with founders to create indispensable solutions to the world's most fundamental problems. On a quarterly basis, they host an invite-only intimate gathering called Fireside Convos, where attendees representing a wide network of stakeholders in the regional entrepreneurial ecosystem discuss timely topics, including the role of AI for startups out of Kentucky and the challenges of identifying and attracting talent. To be considered as a guest, visit huntsicker.co/fireside to apply.
All right, Stevens, welcome back to the podcast. As I was just saying on the intro there, the last time we had you on was near when you were starting the business, right when you had come to Kentucky, October 2022. How have you been since then?
Hey, Logan, thank you very much for inviting me back. Hi, Evan. Nice to see you again. Oh, man, it's been quite a journey since last time we talked. We've done a lot of great things. We've seen a lot of great things as well on this journey. So I'm very much excited to talk about it and give a little bit of update of what we've been up to since then.
I know we were joking before we hit record here. I was like, I feel like ever since we had you on the podcast, it's just was constantly hearing about Feed Coyote and you yourself. And one of the milestones we'll get to at some point, you put in here that you have won like all six major pitch competitions that happen in this region, which I think is just a really cool kind of thing to call out at the top here. But before we get into talking about some of those big updates and milestones, let's just start off by doing a quick refresh on the business and how it was started. So tell us a little bit about Feed Coyote and why you set out to build this business.
Yes, for sure. Feed Coyote, as you mentioned earlier, is a social productivity network that connects freelance professionals around the world to network, but also primarily collaborate on projects so that they can find more freelancing opportunities, hence increase their earnings. So this is a platform that started as a result of myself being a seasoned freelancer, I grew up in the Caribbean in a country where freelancing is basically a way of life. And when I moved to the US, I've done freelancing throughout college. And even after college, I did many gigs in the freelancing ecosystem. So I've been exposed to the problems that freelancers face in terms of having to work in silos or not having all the complementary skills to take on package deals, and also from a productivity perspective. So Feed Coyote is a platform that is solving those problems so that we can make sure that freelancers have that platform where they can refer to in terms of having all the tools to be more productive, but also having a support system on this journey so that they can be more of a success for their business.
Yeah, and just to zoom in on that for just a second, and then Evan, I'll let you jump in as well. I love the aspect because, you know, you hear about freelancers all the time. I feel like that really became a big thing over the past, you know, 5 or 10 years. But when I think of freelancers, I think of like an individual, and it sounds like kind of a lonely sort of profession to be involved in. You're just working on a, you know, oftentimes you think of something like design or development, copywriting, things like that. But I love the aspect of Feed Coyote that you're allowing freelancers to collaborate with other freelancers, almost forming a team to really go after bigger projects. So I just wanted to kind of zoom in on that. But Evan, I'll kick it over to you if you have a question off the back of that.
No, I was going to kind of, you mentioned that it was a way of life from, you know, where you're from. Did you go back to some of those early relationships you had and build the product with them? How did you go about, you know, finding this problem? Yeah. I mean, obviously you were close to it, but how did you make sure that you're building something that these people wanted?
No, definitely. This is something that throughout our journey of building Feed Coyote, I went back to people that I grew up with. I went back to other freelancers that I know in that space so that we can make sure that we build a platform from a user perspective. Maybe that's why, as Logan mentioned earlier, the growth that we've experienced, maybe because our entire team, the founding team of Feed Coyote, we've all worked as freelancers before. So we're building this platform as a platform that we wish that we had, because freelancers, as Logan mentioned, they work in silos. And because of that, they experience economic isolation. And that's one of the big things that we want to take out of the equation for freelancers so that they can have that opportunity to build teams and take on more or bigger package deals. For example, you can be a software developer, you have a big website development project, but you cannot build that platform on your own because you either don't have the SEO skill sets or the content writing. So we pair you up with other freelancers with those skill sets so that you guys can build those projects together. And as you find more freelancers in your ecosystem to work with, we go even further by giving you an entire suite of CRM tools that facilitate the collaboration among those freelancers to make it even more efficient for them to work together.
That's, yeah, I love it. I love the business idea all around. And talk a little bit about, you know, what you were doing before you got into to actually starting this. You mentioned that you were an engineer at Microsoft. So talk about that. Not an engineer, maybe. I might be getting that
wrong, from the business side, yeah.
Microsoft.
Yeah.
Talk about your experience at Microsoft.
Yeah, no, definitely. Prior to launching Feed Coyote, I worked at Microsoft for 5 years. I've had a variety of roles during that time, from sales and marketing, operation, legal, customer service, and all that. So I was also exposed to small business owners' problems while I was working at Microsoft. When I first started, I was in charge of their Bing team for the Canadian market, where we were interacting with business owners over there to help them position their businesses in front of the right customers. So I was exposed to the tech side of things, which kind of like started my love for tech. But prior to that, I studied business. So I have a master's in applied economics and a doctorate in business. So I think I was basically built to build such platform because my entire life kind of been around business and also working in tech. So the experience that I took at Microsoft coupled with my educational training kind of made me the person that I am today and the, you know, the right person to build this platform because I experienced the problem firsthand and I know also how to build a platform to solve it.
Over, you know, you mentioned there that you worked with Microsoft and you're in West Coast, Seattle.
Yeah, I was in Seattle.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, go through that story of being in Seattle and getting to Kentucky.
Yeah, it's quite a journey. When I started working at Microsoft, I was located in North Dakota, in Fargo. And while my time there was an interesting time, and I had a promotion and they moved me to Seattle, and I spent a few years in Seattle. That's when I started thinking about Feed Coyote, because I still were looking into freelance gigs and also talking to other friends that were doing freelancing. So that's when I started thinking about what kind of platform that I can build using my expertise in tech and knowledge in business to help with that problem. So that's when I started crafting the idea of Feed Coyote and designing the product and all that. And I put an amazing team together with other freelancers as well to support me on this journey so that they can provide that outlook that I needed from another person. Because not only when you experience the problem as a tech founder, you need to validate that idea to make sure that the problem is big enough. Because in the end, if you're trying to build a tech startup and trying to become venture-backed, you need a problem that is big enough that has a really big total addressable market so that you can make sure that enough people are experiencing the same problem and making sure that eventually you get enough customers. So from there, it was quite an interesting journey. We got together, we discussed the idea of Feed Coyote, and we started designing it. The very first line of codes for Feed Coyote started early January 2022, and I was still at Microsoft back then, so it was basically working two full-time jobs, like working at night on Feed Coyote, trying to design, trying to code and all that. And then it was quite an interesting thing because our team is a global team, so I work with people from, you know, different time zones, and that was a little bit challenging, making sure that everybody, you know, will be in sync as we work on this. And then some of our teammates also were going some tough time during the time that we launched Feed Coyote. But that really taught me a big lesson, because we were able to launch the MVP within like a record time, like instead of 7 months that we planned out to do it. And we were able to launch that in 3 months instead, because everybody in the team was so well involved within the freelance ecosystem that we knew actually what we needed to do. And now came the time to look for funding, because the early stage of the company, I funded that myself, which was basically my own savings and other things that I had to look into to make sure that I can get this platform out there. And as I was looking into funding, that's when I came across a competition at a time that was in Missouri. And also they had a part of it in Kentucky as well. So I decided to participate in that competition, and I took a flight to Missouri and I spent a weekend there where I needed to pitch. And at that time it was a competition where they were rewarding 5 companies in the end. And we were lucky enough to get a spot in that cohort. So that's when I had to move to Kentucky, because one of the requirements was to move the headquarters of your company to, at that time, Paducah, Kentucky. And I think it was great. And I'm glad to, you know, dig a little bit deeper into that after my move to Kentucky. But that's how I got from Seattle to Kentucky.
I love that story. I remember when we first talked to you about that, I was like, that's wild that he's moved all the way across the country and has now ended up on our ecosystem. And now you've moved to the Louisville ecosystem. Yeah. Is that right? Talk just real briefly about how you ended up in Louisville after initially coming to Kentucky, and what your experience in that ecosystem has been like.
Yeah, when I moved to Kentucky, our very first city was Paducah, because the competition placed me there. But when I was in Paducah, I was really involved in the startup ecosystem here in Kentucky, you know, talking to other founders, participating in networking events. So that's how I came across all the major competitions or resources in Kentucky. And then as a result, I ended up winning the Render competition, which also gave us funding. And one of the requirements also was to move to Louisville so that we can be part of this ecosystem and take advantage of all the resources. And it's been a blast since then. And I'm glad I'm here.
Love that. Well, let's talk about some of the business updates that you sent over prior to recording. Like I mentioned, you've been on a tear. I've heard your name a lot. So let's start off with some of the milestones that we were talking about here. So you know, we've got the first two up there. Let's dig into those two first. Mm-hmm. But tell us about, let's start with the user growth.
Yeah. So, I mean, 2023 was a wonderful year for us at Feed Coyote. Not only we grew our brand from winning all the competitions in Kentucky and participating in other kind of accelerator programs, but also from a customer perspective, I'm very happy with the growth that we've seen. We were able to grow our platform last year the amount of time that it took us to get to the first 10,000 users, we were able to do that in 1 month this year, which was crazy. Because when we first started, I remember I used to reach out to people basically onboarding the very first users individually, one by one. And it was quite an interesting time, because I had a chance to not only talk to customers directly, but also give them a walkthrough of the platform. And that's how I also redefined the platform along the way. And now we've launched multiple versions since then. And it took us around a year to get to 10,000 users that we reached in December 2023. And cross over to 2024. Now we are at 28,000 users because we were able to accelerate that growth using a product-led growth strategy, which means we use the users of the platform to grow the platform. So the users of the platform are primarily our first marketing department. So we use strategies such as premium features so that they can unlock as they invite other freelancers to join the platform. And that was crazy. So it's amazing to see other people talk about your platform and invite their own audiences to join the platform. And from there, we onboarded 18,000 users in the last 10 weeks or so. And it's and now we are averaging around 1,000 new users every single week. It's just amazing to see that.
And how do you think about monetizing? So product-led growth is tricky because you want to make it frictionless enough that they can get in there and try it. How are you deciding when they start to pay for the product? So, you know, examples of this are Slack is kind of the one of the best examples. You only get so much storage in Slack until, you know, your messages start disappearing. If you want to save them, then you got to go to the next tier. So how have you all thought about monetizing?
Yeah, we have different strategies already integrated within the platform to monetize. So we bring the platform, we bring the users on for free. And as they unlock new features based on the product-led growth strategies, as they unlock those features, we expose them to other features that they might need as well to grow their business faster. And we've seen early adopters from that strategy as well that at every single steps in the platform, you can opt into a premium version where you are asked to pay to have more access to more features. And that's currently taking off as well.
And how do you think about churn? So my previous business, Simba, we were going after independent contractors that were real estate agents, and independent contractors are very, you know, fickle. They're hard to reach oftentimes. They might try a product and then they lose a contract, and how are you thinking about marketing to independent contractors and retaining independent contractors? What are strategies there? Because that's a very well-known business problem within the startup space, especially software, is independent contractors are kind of like a dead end. How do you all think of that? Do you guys see it that way, or are you guys viewing it differently?
Yeah, I mean, we approach the problem from a social aspect, which is different from current marketplaces that are servicing freelancers. Fikaudi is a freelance platform with a social media twist, which makes it interesting. So when you come to Fikaudi, you don't only find folks that you can network and collaborate with, but also you can learn. You can also manage your gigs with our CRM tools, and you can talk to each other from a social media perspective. So that makes it even more attractive to freelancers to find a community that they can talk to other folks and make sure that they can learn from each other. So in terms of churn, we have on average over 90% of MAU, which is monthly active users on the platform. So people returning, people signing in, people bringing more people to use the platform. And because of that traction, we were able to launch three new features this year that are targeting more in terms of business owners, so that we can bring that B2B aspect to the platform so that they can take advantage of that high traffic that we have on the app right now.
I love it. And talk about these pitch competitions real quick. So we mentioned that you won six of them.
Yeah.
Talk about how those events helped you as an entrepreneur, what you learned from them. I mean, that's a lot to put into going through each of those and traveling for them and preparing for the pitches and everything. What'd you learn from that experience?
I think 2023 was the year where I've traveled the most. I calculated it. I got on 29 flights and I stayed at 21 hotels in 12 months. It was insane. I felt like I was more traveling than staying at home. But it was a great experience because I got to meet with, you know, great founders building great product. And I love meeting with them because as a tech startup founder, it could be very lonely and you can get depressed very quickly because, you know, you're working every day in your corner. And so you need that community aspect so that you can keep going. So it was amazing to be traveling and meeting up with other founders and talking to investors. I think that really helped me with, you know, from a public speaking perspective. So I felt more comfortable talking about what we're building, about the problem. I got on stage a lot last year, so I got better at pitching the company. I got better at explaining what we're doing because Feed Coyote, the way that we approach the problem of economic isolation and loneliness and freelancing, it's a little bit different from existing marketplaces. So it's kind of like harder to explain that to folks that are not used to that kind of platform yet. So we basically kind of creating a new segment within the freelancing ecosystem itself. So throughout those 12 months last year, I was able to refine my pitch and make it even better each time and got more comfortable on stage, got more comfortable with customers as well as investors. And I think that also made me a better CEO of the company because I was able to learn from other founders as well because, gosh, there are so many great founders out there building so many great platforms. So, you know, I was able to attend South by Southwest last year or Shop Talk in Vegas. So and during these conferences, you see like other founders from other cities building like massive products and you feel inspired. So I was able to kind of draw inspiration from all those meetings and connections that I made last year.
And, you know, it's one thing to pitch at a pitch competition and it's another thing to go speak with investors. Mm-hmm. You know, talk about, you know, the challenges and the success you've had with fundraising to this point. How have you thought about it?
I mean, each pitch is different, depends on the audience. I had to refine my pitch every single time I talk to somebody based on who I'm talking to. For the pitch competitions, I usually tell a story because you need to be able to relate with the judges. Sometimes they are not in your field, so you need to be able to explain what you're building to them in a way that they can understand it. And also connect with the audiences because the energy in the room will play a big role in you winning a pitch competition. So I got a little bit comfortable with that, even better at doing it. So that's how I was able to win all those competitions. But when it comes to talking to VC, a little bit different because those VCs are sometimes more prepared. They know more about the field that you're building. And also it's harder to pitch them and also get them to say yes because they're seeing so many deals a day. They expect so much more from you. So you have to convince them even more. And sometimes you get a lot of rejections. I think I stopped counting. I think at this point I've had over 300 rejections in the last 2 years. Some of them I hear back from them. Some of them I just get straight up ghosted or, you know, whatever the situation is. But being able to talk to them and explain and convince them at another level from a VC perspective is something also as a founder you are supposed to do. And it gets better as you do it more, but it's still challenging to hear a no because you would love somebody to invest in your company so you can have that resource to, you know, keep going.
I'm curious, and I can riff on this a bit after. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. How does getting that many no's affect you personally, outside, professionally? You know, do you see it bleed over into your life outside of, you know, just trying to grow your business? Do you find it, you know, many things on the mental health side, or, you know, that is something I think that not enough founders or people that want to be founders think about is, you know, how many times you're told no throughout the journey, and how have you found that affect you personally? You know, not necessarily professionally, but how have you felt it personally?
Yeah, personally, it's been very tough because when you hear no every day, all day long, at some point, it's going to take an effect on your mental because you don't want to hear that many no's, right? You need somebody to believe in. You need somebody to give you that runway that you're looking for. And I sometimes find myself doubting what we are building, doubting myself as a founder because I wonder, hey, if so many people are telling me no, maybe I'm doing something wrong, or maybe I should just quit because nobody believes in what I'm building. But I've also learned to find a way to keep pushing through it because I know this is part of the journey. And I know you're going to encounter a lot of no's, but it's that one yes that you get. It's how do you take it and how do you transform this into something massive so that later down the road, you can reduce the amount of no's that you get. But it still takes a big toll on me. Sometimes there are certain things that I really would love to have and I get a no for it. And I just want to quit, to be honest. I'm like, man, how do I come back from this? I mean, I've had so many competitions or so many VCs that I really wanted to work with, and they told me no, and I doubted myself. But, you know, I step outside, you know, go on a walk, watch a movie, and just get back at it, because I'm like, I quit my job at Microsoft to do this thing. So there is no way out but through. So I have to make it work regardless.
Yeah, I guess to riff on that with my own personal experience, I always found that, and, you know, I've worked on it since, but when you're told no and you receive that many no's and you've got so many problems to deal with, it's hard for you to want to help other people with their problems, or it kind of makes you cold, you know, in real life. You know, you get off so many calls in a day and you get told no, and then, you know, somebody else is wanting your feedback or wanting to get, you know, emotional output from you, and you just don't have it because you're just exhausted emotionally and mentally from getting that many no's. And I've noticed that, and trying to figure out ways to work on that. But that's one thing I'm curious other founders, if they feel that or not, kind of a sense of just getting cold and like just kind of, very stoic.
Yeah. I was thinking about it recently, actually, because I was thinking of how I help other founders and I share resources with them and I help them refine their pitches for whatever VC that I've applied for before that I got rejected or got money from, or pitch competitions and trying to, you know, work with folks to help them get into tech stars and stuff like that, while I got to know myself that same day as well. But I think maybe it depends on, you know, personality wise sometimes. I mean, me, I really like helping people. So even if I get a no, I still find energy knowing that I help another founder and knowing that I can remove those frictions that I've had on my journey so that they can apply for the same fund and get it. So I have concrete example of some funds I got no's from, and I recommended other people to apply that got yes from those funds. So personally, I feel good, you know, I feel really happy about it to know that I was able to help somebody else. But at the same time, I would love also to have that kind of investment as well to continue with what we're building. But at the end of the day, I keep in mind that it's part of the process. Sometimes it's not personal, it's just business. So you need to be able to find a way to detach yourself from that and keep building.
And talk about Techstars as it relates to this whole streak that you've been on. You're now a Techstars portfolio company. First off, for listeners that don't know what Techstars is, talk about what that entails and then share a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, I mean, I am very proud to be part of Techstars and have Feed Coyote as a Techstars portfolio company, because that's one of the early validation that we needed. Techstars, alongside other top accelerators like Y Combinator or NEO and stuff like that, these are like early stage accelerators that are meant to help you as a founder connect to the ecosystem of other founders and meet with other investors, but also identify areas of improvement on your business and refine the problem and make it in a way that eventually, hopefully, you can become a unicorn, which is a company valued at $1 billion plus. So doing Techstars was really amazing, because not only the experience itself was really fun, I got to travel. I went to Thailand, Vegas, Austin, so many places. So that was amazing. But also, I was part of a cohort with a lot of great founders building great tech, great businesses out there. So I felt that energy that I needed to keep going. And now I'm part of a network that if I need help or if I need to get connected to an investor, chances are I can find somebody in the network that can recommend me. So it's something that since I completed the program, I became a mentor and I've been trying to help other founders get into there by refining their pitches, by making connections for them as well. So I would always recommend that, because you need that early validation, which also helps you when you talk to other investors and say, hey, we're a Techstars portfolio company. So that's kind of like an early stamp on your business that shows that somebody else took a chance on you. Somebody else did some due diligence on what you're building. Then some other people might be more likely to trust you on this process.
So between competitions and, you know, normal fundraising rounds, how much have you raised to date?
We raised around $500,000 so far. But I've been running the company very lean, so we were able to achieve a lot with that funding. And now we are at a stage where we are currently raising a seed round so that we can continue to accelerate our progress.
Nice. And off of that, you know, with that use of funds, I'm sure you've got several people on your team. Talk about your team and what that looks like. What does it mean to run a lean team? What kind of strategies do you put in place to stay lean? Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to work with a very qualified and diverse team. Our team is global, so we have people from all around the world. And those people come in with great ideas. They come in with ways to make the platform better, to move very fast. As a startup, a tech startup, you need to be able to move really, really quickly because tech changes so fast that you need to build, test, reiterate, and just start over or pivot or whatever you got to do. So with my team, I was able to, because we are a global company, we are in 130 countries right now. So our user base is from 130 countries, which is just amazing. And because our team is diverse and global as well, so I was able to build a product that is relatable to people from other countries. For example, when we are interacting with customers in Africa or customers in India, I'm able to integrate features that make sense to them so that they can still be efficient and they can still build their freelance businesses there. So, and because our team is a team that is global and also very highly technical, so I was able to keep our runway or longer, and I was able to keep our I was able to keep the cost very low because we are able to build very fast and build efficiently as well. So I think I would recommend that as you build a company, and now with the workforce becoming more global with talent being distributed throughout the world. So find people that not only believe in the mission that you have for a company, but also are aware of the kind of platform that you're building or somewhat are have some relationship with the problem that you're building. Because our team initially is a team of freelancers, so we all know what's the most efficient way to build a freelance business. So we are able to build this platform from that user perspective.
That's awesome. And to jump back just for a little bit to you leaving your job at Microsoft, because I think that's a really important part of your story, you know, being able to take that leap from that mm-hmm. security of having a job at such a large and well-known tech company to starting your own company. What was the tipping point that made you say, okay, I'm going to take this leap. I'm going to go full-time and go all the way in on starting Feed Coyote?
I think it's when I was so obsessed about getting the platform out there, because while I was working at Microsoft, all I could think was, how do I build a platform that could fix this problem that I've been thinking about for so long? And then that became even like so overwhelming in my thoughts. So I'm like, I have to get it out there. You know, that's why I was not afraid to use my own savings to launch the first version of the platform, because I believed in the idea. I believe in the platform that we're building. I know it will be tough because we are basically creating a new segment, just like Uber or Airbnb 15 years ago. They created a new segment that a lot of people didn't believe in because nobody thought somebody would get a stranger in their cars or a stranger in their house. But with persistence, they keep on creating more values, and eventually it became a way of life. Now people just do Uber or do Airbnb just normal. So I knew it would be hard, but I knew eventually if we succeed, we're going to create a new way of doing freelancing that is not that didn't exist before, although there are so many platforms addressing freelancing, but they didn't approach it from a collaboration perspective among freelancers. So at that time, I decided it was time for me to really get this thing out there and see how it goes. And then eventually we got that first round of funding that kind of helped me get to the next level and decided to quit my job so I can do this full time. And I've been a full time CEO now for 12 months, and it's been a blast, a lot of learnings.
Do you, it's one thing to quit your job, and that's something many people don't do or have the confidence or, you know, courage to do. It's another thing to move across the country to an unknown place, to middle America and Kentucky, and move to Paducah. And so it leads to the question of, you know, do you think that you were born with personality traits that make you more conducive, makes your who you are more conducive to being a good entrepreneur? Do you think entrepreneurs are born that way and willing to move across the country when they want something to be solved and they care about something enough and they want to build something? Or is that something that you learned over time? Like, how do you look at that? Because that's crazy from the outside, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you care enough about something, you'll do whatever it takes to achieve it. And I think also it takes a little bit of personality traits as well. I think personally, I'm the kind of person who will go after what he wants, because I grew up in the Caribbean. I moved to the U.S. A few years ago, and I lived like in 6 or 7 states in the last 6 years. So I'm always on the move, basically, either for school or for work. And then after that, I did so many other things just so that I can get where I need to be. So I don't think location or having to do something that is out of the ordinary is something that is difficult for me, because I'm always on the go. I'm always looking for the next best opportunity, and I'm always looking for a way to achieve my goals. So I think I would have moved anywhere to make Fidelity work, because I knew in my heart I needed to do what it takes. And I'm glad I moved here, because we found an ecosystem that is working, but I think nothing was going to hold me back to make this thing work.
I love that. And I'm glad that you did it. You know, you're now 12 months into it and you've seen all these successes. I'm sure that you feel the same way, but taking that leap, like Evan said, is a very scary thing. And that kind of leads into this next section, which is just, you know, giving some advice to others and to yourself as well, if we're looking back in time. So this next section, like I mentioned, is kind of meant for just giving this sort of quick, concise advice that can be very shareable, that we can put out on social media and hope that lots of people see it. So this first question here, if you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice before starting your business, what would it be?
It would be tough, because this is hard. I wish somebody would have told me back then how hard it would be, how many no's I would have, because some days I just want to quit, to be honest. But I also remember I'm in this thing because I'm on a mission. I have to do what I have to do to make it work, regardless of the amount of no's. But it's going to be tough. If you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to launch your own business or your own company, you need to do it because you're passionate enough about it that you can deal with any rejection. You can keep going when things are very tough, because it is going to be tough. And also, you need that community of support to help you get through those, you know, dark days, because you're going to have them. You're going to have days where you doubt yourself or days where you want to quit. So you need to surround yourself with other business owners or other founders or other entrepreneurs, whomever in your community that can inspire you so that you can keep going, because being an entrepreneur is tough. I had a pretty cool gig at Microsoft. Sometimes I wonder, man, why did I quit to do this thing? But also I remember that I'm passionate enough about this problem that I want to build something to help other people and fix it, that no matter what, I still wanted to give it a try. And if anything, in the end, I would know that I tried, and we either fail or succeed, but at least I tried.
I love that.
And why have you stayed in this region to grow the business?
Yeah. Well, Kentucky has been really great to us. Since I moved here, the brand has grown so much. Like, I feel like people know Feed Coyote now. Feed Coyote is a thing when you say Feed Coyote. Some people even recognize me without me introducing myself, saying, hey, you know, we know about you or something. So that's kind of like a great feeling to know that people pay attention to what you're building in that community. So because also Louisville is a really nice community for founders, I feel like everybody in Louisville is a business owner, because I meet so many founders. So I like being around other founders because I find inspiration in what they're building. And I find that we are on the same journey, so we can learn from each other. So I'm glad that I moved here. And now Louisville has become a big part of our startup, because most of our funding and most of our user growth happened while I was in Louisville. So I think it's great for us to stay where the things are working so that we can make sure that we can get to the next level.
I love it. Well, what's next for Feed Coyote? What do you have on the horizon? What are you planning over these next few months, next few years?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of new features that we want to introduce. We are continuing to talk to our customers so that we can continue to identify areas of improvement, stuff that we need to bring to the table so that we can bring more value to them. So we are currently growing our user base very quickly. So my goal is to get to at least 1 million users in the next 18 months. At the pace that we're growing, I think we can make it, but we still want to keep working hard to get there. But yeah, I mean, all the way up, basically, not nonstop, because we found a niche, we built a product that is appealing enough and people want it. Now we just need to bring it to those people wherever they are.
That's awesome. Well, I hope next time we talk to you on one of these podcasts, we can talk about you having a million users on the platform, which
I can't wait for that day.
Awesome milestone for sure. So as soon as you hit that, you let us know. We'll have you back on. But man, it's been awesome catching up with you. It's been awesome to follow along as you've built this company and hear about all the great successes that you're seeing with it. And we're glad that you're doing it here in Kentucky. We're glad that your path led here
to this. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
To do it here. Before I let you go, where can people go if they want to learn more? What's the website URL, the social handles, all that good stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I usually, because I use Feed Coyote every day, basically, I usually now connect with people on Feed Coyote. So I usually tell people, sign up for Feed Coyote and find me on there and connect with me, and you can send me messages and all that. But also, the first contact would be feedcoyote.com. So if you want to check out our landing page to learn more about the company, or you can just find us on iOS and Android if you want to download the app. It's Feed Coyote, FeedCoyote, or you can sign up also using the web app. We can take it from there.